Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again and again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Jay bringing you another episode of the GSMC Technology Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. So we got some really exciting stuff to talk about this episode, so let's just get right on into it. So first one is Kahoot. Kahoot is a startup that operates a popular platform for user-generated educational gaming, which raised $15 million in October this year. And it was mentioned that Disney had a stake in the company by way of the Disney Accelerator, and it had an option to become a larger shareholder if it exercised its warrants. Now, with some 60 million games on the platform, Kahoot announced that this has come to pass. Disney is taking that option, working out to a 4% stake in the startup at a $376 million valuation, based on the current share price of 28 Norwegian kroner. Shares of Kahoot are traded on the Norway OTC as an unlisted stock. It makes Disney's stake in the app worth about $15 million, although the actual value of the warrants Disney is exercising is, of course, smaller than this. Kahoot did decline to comment for this story beyond the investment announcement posted on the exchange, but for some context, this is a nice bump up in Kahoot's valuation from October, when it was at $300 million. Other sizable and notable investors in the company include Microsoft and Nordic investor Northzone, which has backed Spotify and other significant startups out of the region. Now, on the part of Disney, it's not clear yet whether its Kahoot stake will lead to more Disney content on the platform, or if this is more of an arm's-length financial backing. It's not really too known yet. The two have already put Lucasfilm content on Kahoot, and there may be more to come. The entertainment giant has made nearly 50 investments by way of its accelerator program. In some cases, it increases those to more significant holdings, as it has in the case of HQ Trivia, Sphero, Epic Games, company behind Fortnite, a very different take on gaming compared to Kahoot, Samba TV, and more. Disney has been dabbling in both gaming and education as vehicles to market its mini brands, and also as salient businesses of their own. No surprise, given that one primary focus for it has been on younger consumers and their needs and interests. In some cases, it may use strategic investments to do this, for example, with Disney theme nights on HQ Trivia. Interestingly, although it doesn't appear that Disney invests in the Indian educational app Bajoos, which itself just raised $300 million, educational app, which has been described as Disney-esque, teamed up with Disney in October to develop co-branded educational content, another sign of Disney's interests in the field. Kahoot has been around in one form or another since 2006, although to be honest, I've never really heard of it before. Originally as a gamified education concept called Lecture Quiz before launching as Kahoot in 2003, but has seen a sharp rise in users in the last few years on the back of strong growth in the U.S., benefiting from a wider trend of educators creating content on mediums and platforms that they know students already use and love. Kahoot is not your average gaming company. Some games are created in-house, but the majority of them are user-generated. Kahoots, in the company's parlance, created by the people setting the learning tasks or those trying to create a more entertaining way of remembering or learning something. These, in turn, become games that potentially anyone can use to learn something, hence the name. There have been around 60 million of these games created to date, which is a pretty amazingly huge number, considering that this is educational content at the end of the day. Kahoot has developed its business along two avenues, with games for K-12 students and games for business users, building training and other professional development in a wrapper of gamification to engage workers more in the content. In practice, about half the games in Kahoot's catalog are available to the public and half are private, with the split roughly following the company's business model. Games made for corporate purposes tend to be kept private, while the educational ones tend to be made publicly available. The business model also follows that split, with Kahoot's business users accounting for the majority of its revenue, too. So, yeah, when I heard of this, like I said, I had never heard of this before. I'm familiar, though, with some educational games. Like, I would say, in a way, Cut the Rope could have some educational value to it. I'll say that. You know, some of these, like, say if you get, like, digital books or some of the Dr. Seuss books or some children's books, some of these tablets used to come with, and I think the, you know, apps themselves still do come with, where you can, you know, have the book read to the student, like, to the child or the, you know, user, right? You can have that happen. And in that sense, not only are they having the story read in a fun and exciting way, but it might help them learn to read too, right? And I remember when I heard of that, I was like, that is a really cool, really fascinating feature. And this isn't like brand new. I think like Leapfrog, which I don't even know if it's around anymore, but Leapfrog used to be something where, like, you know, it was an educational, like, not even, I don't know if you would say a console, but it was a game, a gaming system that had just educational games on it, right? It's just the way it was. And since then, I've heard there's been, like, you know, channels and, like, you know, apps and things like that. That's just, like, you know, are all just have educational-based stuff. It's just the way it is, right? When I was growing up, there were things like Nick Jr. and stuff that were some of their shows that have like cartoons and shows that have educational stuff for kids of a certain age group. And, like, the Numa Babies is sort of like that, too, in a sense, where it wants to have some educational content there, not just, hey, you know, it's a show and it's fun, you should watch it, and it's exciting. No, no, no. So this isn't something brand new, but I never heard of Kahoot before, but Kahoot sounds like a pretty amazing company. I think doing, like, you know, connecting with Disney is an absolutely wonderful idea. Disney is not only a really big company, but they have a enormous amount of content. They do. They have just so much content. And I think there's a good possibility, like, you know, with some of the content they have on Disney Junior and the Disney Channel and maybe even Disney XD, like, you know, for they could do, like, books and games, you know, where kids could play them and learn as they play them. And I know that even when I was a kid, mind you, they didn't have games like this then, but you still learned things from games. You kind of, you know, got stronger with your dexterity. You learned right from wrong, you know, like who was good, who was bad. And, you know, how to, you know, just like, you know, solve puzzles and things like that, you know, to get to the end. So this is, like, not brand new to gaming, but a company that does this exclusively, I think, is an amazing idea. I really like it, to be honest. I'm really excited for it. I'm really intrigued by it. And yeah, I'm actually tempted to just check this out because I'm like, man, what, like, 60 million games, that's an enormous amount of games. It doesn't mean they're, like, you know, like Nintendo games where they probably, you know, are 30 hours of gameplay. I don't think. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm going to guess they're probably more along the lines of maybe Cut the Rope or something like that where, you know, hey, you know, you play this game to get to the end to learn how to do something, I would guess. I'd really have to personally check this out. But, yeah, but as far as I know, I think Kahoot is available on tablets. I don't know if it's available on mobile devices like cell phones. I'm not sure about that, but I could see it being available on tablets. And I'd imagine it'd be in the iOS store or the, not the iOS store, the iTunes. I'd imagine it'd be on there and probably on Google Play. I would think it'd be available on those. It'd be worth checking out. And I don't think there's a cost to it. And it's kind of cool. It sounds like to me their model isn't just, hey, just for kids. It's, hey, you know what? Businesses can use them too. And I will say from just some of the jobs I have had, learning stuff isn't always that fun or that exciting. And I think going on a gaming aspect of that or, you know, a gaming fashion, I think is a great idea. I think it'd be like, hey, I'd love to learn this because it's not just usual watch a video, you know, and hear all the stuff that some employees have probably heard for years, right? It might get a little old, a little bland. It doesn't really change much or anything. So a new way to just do that stuff and make it more exciting and get them more engaged and more excited to do it, I think is a wonderfully great idea. And I'm going to keep my eye on Kahoot now because I'm definitely curious to learn more and to see more what's going on here and what they're going to do with it next. I'm really, really intrigued and interested. And I think that it's a wonderful thing they have going on here. So, yeah, I'm really excited for it. So we're going to take our first short little break, and we'll be back in a moment with more technology news.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Zero.
Hello there, everybody. We're back with some more technology news. So this is another interesting little article that I had never heard of this before, but it's actually not that far from me where this has been going on. So it starts with San Francisco partially banned delivery robots because they obstructed pedestrians. So Postmates built one with eyes, turn signals, and a mandate to yield. Serve is Postmates' new cooler meet autonomous stroller that it hopes can cut costs and speed up deliveries. The semi-autonomous rover uses cameras and LiDAR to navigate sidewalks, but always has a human pilot remotely monitoring a fleet of Serves who can take control if there's a problem. There's even a help button, touchscreen, and video chat display for customers, so customers or passersby can use to summon assistance. Serve will be rolling out in various cities over the next year, starting in Los Angeles. It does deliveries to customers that unlock its cargo hatch with their phone or a passcode, but also can grab food from restaurants in congested areas and bring them to a Postmates dispatch hub from which delivery people can take the packages the last mile. That could save Postmates money on delivery labor, but the company didn't provide any information on how it might help transition couriers to other roles or careers. Somehow, as a society, we're okay with moving a 2-pound burrito with a 2-ton car. All the energy is used to move the car, not the burrito. And there's all the congestion it introduces, says Ali Kashani, VP of Postmates X Special Projects. So, Postmates spent the last couple of years piloting autonomous rovers built by Starship and Robbie before deciding only it had the on-demand experience to build the right bot. Serve can carry up to 50 pounds of goods for 25 miles on a single charge, enough to make around a dozen deliveries per day. Thanks to a low center of gravity achieved by building the battery into the bottom of the chassis, it's less likely to get cow-tipped. It uses Velodyne LiDAR and a NVIDIA Xavier processor to tell where it's going. Avoiding becoming an obstacle to seniors, children, and people in wheelchairs will be critical if cities are going to allow robots like Serve to operate. In December, San Francisco nearly banned the bots by limiting companies to 3 robots each, with only 9 total in the city that are relegated to low population areas. And they can't travel more than 3 miles per hour and must be supervised remotely by humans. There's also the question of what happens to the labor Serve replaces. A Postmates spokesperson claims that Serve's about augmenting its fleet with superpowers rather than replacing its fleet. The company does 4 million deliveries per month total in more than 550 cities, and some might not even be within the scope of robots. But it's nice to see Postmates spin up some training courses or offer transitions to behind-the-scenes operations and customer service roles to deliverers that eventually will feel the squeeze. Interestingly, Kashani hinted at how Postmates might end up moving to an Uber X, Uber Black car model where you'd pay more to have a human take your delivery upstairs and directly to your door, or you might pay less if you're willing to grab your order from the Serve robot out on the curb. Essentially, Postmates Serve is poised to turn human delivery into a luxury. So, reading this article in its entirety, And yeah, the fact that they've already done this a little bit in San Francisco, which I think is interesting, and I had no idea that was happening, but clearly it looks like it is. But the fact that they want to do this, I see pluses and negatives to this, really, in a nutshell, I do. So the plus is, yeah, you know, it'll like, you know, probably get stuff to people faster, maybe a little bit quicker, with less hassle, less human error. You know, but if it's only got a 25-pound limit, you know, it's only so many packages it can carry at a time, right? And only for such an amount of time, too. Correct? Correct. So, it sounds like it's, in theory, not a bad idea. But, yeah, I do agree. I am very worried about, well, what are you going to do with the people who already do the deliveries? You know, who go around from block to block and, you know, street to street and city to city, you know, however, you know, far they go. What's going to happen to them? And it's a little distressing when it's like, well, there isn't really an answer right now. There isn't like, oh, don't worry, we're going to have them, you know, work office jobs, or we're going to have them, like, you know, still do this, or we're going to have them controlling the, you know, the surf. It doesn't say any of that. And that is a little disturbing. That's a little, well, not disturbing isn't the right word. It's a little distressing, maybe, is the better word. It's like, it's a little like, well, are you just going to do these and they're just going to be out of jobs? I mean, because that's kind of not a good thing. I mean, I hate to say it, but the economy doesn't need that right now. It's like, no, we need more jobs, not less. Now, maybe if you train them how to build said serves or maintenance said serves, or, like I said, remote control said serves, something like that might be better, and it'd probably be better for the company and especially its employees and the morale. Because right now, at least from what I read from this article, it sounds like we want to get these out there and our human workforce, meh, we don't care. That's what it sounds like. Now, maybe that's not what they're actually saying here. Maybe not. Probably not. But that's what the article itself kind of entails. And that's not really a good thing. It's like, no. What we don't need is, we don't need, you know, and there's been plenty of movies and TV shows and video games about this where if robots come and they take human jobs, it's long-term not better for, you know, humanity. It's just not. It's not better for humanity. It's not better for the economy. It does harm to all those things. It just does. Detroit Become Human, perfect example of that. You know, all these robots were made, androids, you know, to do, like, you know, so many jobs, and like the unemployment went goes up to like 30-something%. It's like, that's, you know, just an example there. So it's not terrible to make stuff like this and to, like, make, you know, technological advancements and things like that. There's nothing wrong with that, but don't, you know, do it at the cost of, you know, your employees. Some employees that may have been there for 20-30 years, it's like, what are they going to do now? I mean, seriously, like, they're not going to necessarily know how to work said things, but but if you're able to, you know, train them or let them, like, know, hey, you know, don't worry, we've got you covered still. We're not just going to drop you to the sidewalk. That might be a better thing. So, yeah, but it doesn't sound like a bad idea. And it seems like, you know, maybe in certain situations, like, I don't know, rain or snow, maybe it'll be good because, you know what, they're going to be able to go out there and do that stuff, and a person, not necessarily, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, it sounds like, really, this was an article when I saw this, like, all right, it's interesting. It sounds different. It's something that, you know, I thought I had never heard before, but it looks like it's been tested already in some cities, like I said, San Francisco, LA, things like that. But, I don't know. I think this is something that definitely, you know, fine tune it some more, work on it some more. And really the most important thing there is just, you know, like, still, like, you know, make, like, assure your workforce they're okay, they're not going to be, like, they're going to be fine, and might even be a good thing to start the training now for maybe, like, you know, positions only they could do, like I said, like, controlling them or maintaining them or things like that. I mean, maybe even working with them, I don't know, in case their batteries do go out while, you know, delivery's going on, maybe something like that. Might be a good idea. I definitely am going to keep my eye on this. I think this is truly interesting. I said, like, it sounds like right now it's in the testing phases where it might be, you know, tested and experimented on in certain different cities, but it's not something that is going mainstream yet. So if you work for some of these companies, don't worry about it. You're not, you know, it's just going to be like something they're testing and trying out and seeing where it goes. And I think the Uber idea actually might not be a bad idea. That one I'm kind of think might almost be a better thing to do than the serve, but that may just be me. So we're going to take another short little break, but don't worry, we'll be back in a few moments with more technology news.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Zero.
Hello everybody, this is Jay, back for some more technology news. So this is usually one of my favorite parts of this podcast, usually. And this, you know, I usually try to keep myself pretty in tune to the new games coming out, you know, things like that. But somehow this one fell completely under my radar. I'd never, ever heard of this game before. Now, I don't know if it's because maybe it just got announced very recently. That's a good possibility that could have happened. But yeah, this was a game I never really heard of before. And I haven't really played the series before. I want to say I've played some of the Call of Duty games. And I usually get my butt just kicked and handed to me with those. But I'm usually also playing against players who are clearly leaps and bounds better than me. They're just better. They're like, you know, like I'm here, down here, and they're just way up there. It's just the way it is, you know, and I've come to accept that. I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm going to try these games. I'm going to play these games. I'm not going to do well at these games. It's just the way it is. Maybe I don't have enough patience. Maybe I don't have enough. I don't know what it is, but I'm just not usually that good at these games. But anyways, so let's jump into this game here that sounds actually rather intriguing. It's called Tom Clancy's The Division 2. So, lead a team of hardened agents into post-pandemic Washington, D.C. to restore order and stop a new civil war before it starts. The fate of the free world is on the line. So, Washington, D.C. is on the brink of collapse. Lawlessness and instability threaten our society, and rumors of a coup in the Capitol are only amplifying the chaos. All active division agents are desperately needed to save the city before it's too late. After you complete the main campaign, you can gain access to new specializations such as demolitionist, sharpshooter, and survivalist. Each specialization will open up an entire new progression system with new skills, mods, and unique talents to acquire and maximize your agent efficiency in your chosen role. So this game was built with an endgame first mentality, ensuring players always have access to fresh, unique, and diverse activities long after completing the main campaign. Tom Clancy's The Division 2's endgame introduced brand new challenges and progression systems, unique twists and surprises, and, for the first time, raids. Players will also be able to access a wealth of post-launch content, including a full year of free additional story-driven missions, map expansions, and gameplay modes. Also, the Dark Zone is an untamed area of the map with some of the best loot in the game. It is also the most dangerous area in the game, where fear, betrayal, and tension are high, as any other agent can turn against you and steal your hard-earned loot. This playground was designed to provide a fair and exciting experience to all players, regardless of their level of progression. So, just reading a bit about this game, it sounds interesting. It's not necessarily brand new, not to the series, just I guess it's for games in general. I mean, like, we have Days Gone, which is coming out, which is like a post-apocalyptic of sorts game. The trailer I watched for this and some of the photos I saw looks like it's that. It doesn't really give a like year when all this is going on. It really doesn't, but just from what I saw in the trailer, I'm like, oh, it's definitely post-apocalyptic, though. Yeah, something really bad happened that just brought the, you know, entire Washington, D.C. into absolute chaos. It's just, it's a mess. It's seen better days, let's put it that way. It's very clear. And it looks like, you know, you and a team of maybe your friends or just, you know, NPCs are going to be going around just trying to restore order and, I guess, stopping things getting worse. Although, like I said again in the trailer, it looked pretty bad already. You're like, I don't know if it could get much worse. It clearly could, or there wouldn't be a game. But it looks like things, yeah, are pretty bad. They're in pretty bad shape. The Washington, D.C. has seen better. I couldn't really tell by what I saw if it's like the whole country's this way or just Washington, D.C. is this way. I couldn't really tell. I didn't really see anything that said one way or the other. But it sounds like, yeah, like there's a lot of game like stuff to this game. I think it's going to come out on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, at least the PlayStation 4. I think it's coming out on. And I haven't really played this series or really much games like this. Like I said at the beginning, you know, I usually get my butt kicked and handed to me at these games. I just do. So I'm not a huge fan of them because, even though I'm not a terrible gamer or a terrible game player, when it comes to this genre, there are people who really just are, you know, the masters and I'm the apprentice. It's just the way it is, you know. I'm the noob and they're the expert. It's just the way it is. It's just how it is, you know. And, but yeah, it sounds like a really great new chapter in this game. Like I said, it's the Division 2, so I'd imagine, I believe there was a Division 1, although I don't know how long ago Division 1 came out. I'm just being honest, I don't really know. But I do know that it sounds like this is a game that isn't over once the main objective is over, and that's kind of a nice thing. I'll admit that some of the games I have played recently and in the past, it's like once you do everything okay, well, that's it, the game's over, and it's kind of like a letdown. It's like, well, it was fun, but no moss. And it sounds like this game's like, oh, no, there is moss, plenty moss, you know, which is nice. I'm sure that as it goes along, it sounds like they're even saying there'll be a DLC, you know, like which I think a number of these games like to do, and it keeps the, you know, players engaged and things like that, and, you know, gives them new things to do and new things to unlock, which I don't think is a bad idea at all. I mean that. It's really not. I think it's like, hey, you know what? That's a great plan. You should totally do that. And even Nintendo has done that lately with some of their stuff, and it has, you know, been good results. I mean, they did on Breath of the Wild, they had, well, what was the pack called? It was like, can't even remember what it was called, but the point is they did it where, like, hey, you know, there's new bad guys, there's new, you know, trials to go through, there's new things to unlock, and it was kind of weird. One of them was a motorcycle, but sure, why not? Because, I don't know, it made sense to somebody. But there were some other things you got to do, like, where, hey, if you thought the game was over and you think the game has become no longer a challenge, well, here's something that makes it a challenge again, right? And I've played some of the DLCs before and done some of the DLCs. The good example for me was Hyrule Warriors. I actually unlocked a lot of the DLC for that, and I'll admit it definitely added new elements to the game, new challenges to the game. It added elements that were much more difficult than the just basic, you know, basic original story. And there were some fun new modes. There was one where you could go around as giant monster Ganon destroying smaller monsters. So I thought that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed doing that. It was challenging, but it was really kind of satisfying at the same time. Like, oh, look, there's a giant creature that is Link, you know, giving me a hard time. Is Ganon? Nope. 1, 2, 3, you're dead. Ha, ha, ha. You know, so it's kind of satisfying. So it's nice to, like, you know, see stuff like that come up. It's like, hey, you know, the game isn't over. There's more to the game. It'll be more exciting, you know. And there's new ways to keep it exciting and fun and things like that. And the Dark Zone, that sounds like a really treacherous, but probably, you know, worthwhile to check out place too. But I would assume you don't want to go there, you know, unprepared. You probably want to level up a bit first and, you know, get some of your skills and things like that up first. It sounds like that's probably a good idea. I would just recommend that as a gamer myself. You know, you probably don't want to go in there blind because, well, if you have any cool stuff, you may not have it for long. It's just the reality. So this game does come out March 15th, 2018, so about 3 months from now. And like I said, I know it's coming out on PlayStation. I am not sure if it's coming out on Xbox, but I would think it's going to be on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, I think. But I'm not sure about the Xbox One, but it just sounds like this is a game that I could see being on both platforms. But Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure. I'm really not. It's just the truth. But yeah, definitely check it out. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you're a fan of this series, then, you know, these kinds of games, this is going to be one you're definitely going to want to play. So that's all we have for this episode of the Technology Podcast. I had a lot of fun bringing all this cool stuff to you. You know, I hope you learned some really cool things. But don't worry, we'll be back soon with more Technology Podcast news. We'll be right back.